Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Billionaire investor Warren Buffett is a big deal in investment circles and well beyond. This month, in an essay in the New York Times, Buffett made a big call for higher taxes on America's super rich. Higher taxes on the rich won't scare off investors, he said. Lower taxes on the rich have not delivered jobs. Quoting him, my friends and I have been coddled long enough by a billionaire-friendly Congress, wrote Warren Buffett. It's time for shared sacrifice from the top, he said, to deal with the nation's deficit. This hour on Point, Warren Buffett's call for the rich to pay more taxes and what that would mean for America. You can join the conversation. Are you with Buffett on this one or not? Should the super rich pay more? You can comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Now let's just look at Warren Buffett's essay for a minute here. This was August 14th, op-ed page of the New York Times, Dateline Omaha, where he famously makes his home. He wrote, among other things, he wrote, our leaders have asked for shared sacrifice. Warren Buffett wrote, while the poor and middle class fight for us in Afghanistan, and while most Americans struggle to make ends meet, we mega-rich, talking about himself and his rich friends, continue to get our extraordinary tax breaks. He wrote, blessings are showered upon us, billionaires and the rich, by legislators in Washington who feel compelled to protect us, much as if we were spotted owls or some other endangered species. Buffett wrote that last year, his tax bill, the income tax he paid, was just about $7 million. He wrote, that sounds like a lot of money, but what I paid was only 17.4% of my taxable income. Looked around his office, he paid the lowest percentage of anyone in his office, the other 20 people. 17.4% for him. Their tax burdens, he wrote, were from 33 to 41%, averaged 36%, a lot higher than the richest guy in the room. He said back in the 80s and 90s, tax rates for the rich were far higher. He said, according to a theory I sometimes hear, I should have thrown a fit and refused to invest. I didn't refuse, nor did others. Warren Buffett wrote, I've worked with investors for 60 years, and I have yet to see anyone, not even when capital gains rates were 39.9% in 1976, compared to 15% now, yet to see anyone shy away from a sensible investment because of the tax rate on their potential gains. Buffett wrote, my friends and I have been coddled long enough by a billionaire-friendly Congress. It's time for our government to get serious about shared sacrifice. We're going to look at that in this hour. We'll hear in a moment from Stephen Moore, a founder of the conservative Club for Growth. He says no to those higher taxes on the rich. But joining me first from Ithaca, New York, is Robert Frank, professor of economics at Cornell University, author of The Winner-Take-All Society, Luxury Fever, and the forthcoming The Darwin Economy, Liberty, Competition, and the Common Good. Robert Frank, thanks for joining us. Welcome to On Point.
My pleasure, Tom.
Warren Buffett wants to raise taxes on those making more than $1 million. He says, I would raise rates immediately on taxable income in excess of $1 million, I guess starting on the dollar after $1 million, including, he says, on dividends and capital gains. And for those who make $10 million or more, he'd suggest an additional increase in the tax rate. Robert Frank, first to you, do we need that, looking at the deficit we're looking at, and what would the impact be on the American economy?
Well, we certainly do need more revenue. I think it wasn't his purpose to propose a comprehensive tax reform bill. I think he was saying, where can we tinker with rates on existing taxes to generate the extra revenue we need? Many will say we ought to bridge the gap between revenues and outlays by cutting wasteful government spending. You know, every president in my lifetime has pledged to do that. They've many of them made a sincere effort to. Spending went up during every presidency during my lifetime. The Medicare program is expensive. It's going to get more expensive as people retire by the millions in the next years. The same for Social Security. We should cut out waste in government, but government programs exist because voters want them, and it's very difficult to cut them. We can be absolutely certain that government spending, just taking into account what we know we have to spend in the coming decades, isn't going to go down. So, yes, we need more revenue. And if you're going to raise a tax on anyone, who can it be? It can't really be the lower-income families or the middle-income families. They're stressed beyond the breaking point in many cases. So I think you have to look, where's the money in the economy?
Those making more than a million, that's about a quarter million households in this country. Those making more than 10 million, that's about 8,000, just over 8,000 households. Now that, out of a population of 300 plus million, is that enough? As rich as these households are, is that enough to make a serious difference in our deficit?
It will make a big difference, yes. Is it enough? No. There are other things we'll need to do to get revenues in line with expenses. But, yeah, it'll make a huge difference. Taxes as a share of GDP now are lower than at any time since the 1950s. The kinds of rates that Mr. Buffett is proposing don't affect the first dollar you earn. They don't affect the 900,000th dollar you earn. They kick in only after you're past $1 million. That's when the rates start to go up. And most people can make ends meet pretty well at a salary of $1 million and can afford to pay higher taxes on income beyond that amount. The top rates used to go up into the 90s. That was probably too high. But the executives trying to become CEO of their corporation didn't knock off on Fridays and go play golf because of those high rates. They worked hard. I think the idea that the economy will grind to a halt if people at the top on the next dollar they earn beyond several million have to pay a slightly higher tax rate on it, that's just not the world as we know it.
Let's listen to Warren Buffett for a minute. Now, he's also saying in here, he said he would leave taxes where they are for 99.7% of taxpayers, leave them unchanged. But he would, he said this Committee of 12, super congressional committee that's been set up to find savings and go after the deficit, maybe revenues as well. They're going to have to be serious. They're going to have to think big. And if they don't, we could see a loss of confidence in this country. Here he was Warren Buffett himself talking last week with Charlie Rose.
If these 12 members who have been appointed now to the super committee, yeah, if they come back with something that's a lot of mush, you know, the American public's at it.
And what happens to the country?
It isn't good. It isn't good. The country will still come through. Believe me, we'll rise to whatever the occasion demands eventually. But we are wasting so much in the way of potential output in terms of the opportunities for people that we ought to get on with it. I mean, the job of government is to govern.
Is to govern. And in the wake of his call for higher taxes on the rich, he said, we've really got to keep in mind people at the bottom of the pay scale in this country.
The lucky ones still prosper incredibly disproportionately, you know, under this. I'm not for having some kind of a czar in Washington decides what's proper for everybody, but I do think something that thinks about the 60 million people that are living at $21,000 a year or less in their household. I think a rich, rich, rich society should think about them a little bit every day.
Billionaire investor Warren Buffett. Robert Frank is with us from Cornell University, and joining us right now from Washington, D.C. is Stephen Moore. He was a founder of the Conservative Club for Growth. They've been very active in looking for lower taxes in this country. He's now editorial board member and senior economics writer for The Wall Street Journal, co-author of The End of Prosperity, How Higher Taxes Will Doom the Economy If We Let It Happen. Stephen Moore, welcome to On Point.
Hi, great to be with you.
What do you make of super billionaire investor Warren Buffett's call for higher taxes on the rich?
Well, I think that Warren Buffett is a great American, and we need more people like Warren Buffett. Billionaires and millionaires pay the bulk of the taxes in this country, and so we need more of them so we can balance our budget. I agree with Professor Frank on one thing that he said, which is we do need more revenues. There's no question about it. And by the way, the reason we don't get much revenues these days is because the Obama economics program hasn't worked, and the economy is still really in this economic slump where we're only getting 15% of GDP. If we can get back to a strong, bullish economy, we'll get back to 18 or 19% of GDP just through the growth.
Warren Buffett says that is not at loggerheads with higher taxes on the rich. He says he's never seen anybody who's shied away from an investment because tax rates were higher.
Well, that's certainly not. I mean, look, Warren Buffett is a smart guy. I mean, he's an incredible investor. I don't think he's a great tax analyst. I mean, I think the evidence of the last 30 or 40 years shows, in my opinion, that this is what we talk about in our book, The End of Prosperity, that the one of the most important factors in determining where growth is going to happen and where investment around the world is going to happen is tax rates. And where I disagree with Warren Buffett, first of all, I agree with him. We need to blow up our tax system. And we need to just totally start over. And get, the tax system is not working. It's not generating revenues. The rates are too high. There are too many loopholes. I think there's a growing consensus among that. I think what we need to do is the opposite, though. I mean, I think we ought to go with a flat tax. Let's get back to the old Steve Forbes idea, 18% rate with no deductions at all, no loopholes, so Warren Buffett can't give $30 billion to the Gates Foundation as a big loophole to avoid paying estate taxes. That kind of thing will generate much more revenue, but much more importantly, the big problem with the economy right now is jobs. In this tax system, the rates are too high to generate the kind of jobs we need.
But we're paying the lowest taxes as a percentage of income in decades, and Buffett says, look, back when taxes were much higher, we were doing better.
This is my point, that we have a tax system where, let's just, for example, take our corporate tax rate. We have the second highest statutory corporate tax rate in the world. That works to our disadvantage.
Nobody pays it, right?
Right. Well, this is exactly the point I'm making is we have the worst of all economic, tax systems. We have very high tax rates, and it doesn't generate much revenue. That's the opposite of a good tax system. A good tax system has low rates and does generate revenues. And so that's why I think what we need to do is if we raise tax rates in the country, we're going to see more investment capital leave the United States. This is something I disagree with Warren on. I do think tax rates matter a lot in terms of where investment happens.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point, and we're talking this hour about billionaire Warren Buffett's call for higher taxes on the rich. We're weighing that call and looking at what it would mean for this country, for the deficit, for the U.S. economy. Stephen Moore is with us, a co-founder of the Club for Growth, very conservative opponent of higher taxes, now editorial board member and senior economics writer for The Wall Street Journal, co-author of The End of Prosperity. Robert Frank is with us, professor of economics at Cornell University, author of The Winner-Take-All Society and Luxury Fever. We've got lots of response online here, and I mean lots. Jemima Holbrook says, after I read the op-ed piece, I wrote Warren Buffett a letter thanking him for what he said. I think we should all write to him and back him up. Then Congress can see what the people want. But Greg says government cannot be trusted with yet more revenue. What do you think? 800-423-8255. Robert Frank, what about Stephen Moore's argument? He says, well, yes, we're going to need more revenue, but the way to do it is not to tax the rich. Change the corporate tax rate, change the whole tax picture, lay off the rich. You'll mess with investment and economic growth.
I'm amazed that here he and I are almost exactly on the same page except for a few details. I'm all for a radical tax overhaul. The system we have now is incredibly complex and inefficient. We could raise more revenue and cause less damage by a radical tax overhaul for sure. I agree with him, too, that it would be better to tax consumption instead of income. I don't like the idea of a flat tax. A flat tax would be a huge tax cut for Warren Buffett and others in the high-income brackets. 18% is what they'd be paying. They don't consume very much anyway, so it'd be even a lower tax rate on their income than that. So what I would propose in lieu of a flat tax on consumption, which is essentially a national sales tax, would be a steeply progressive tax on consumption. You report your income to the IRS the same as you do now. Then you report how much you saved during the year. We know how to do that for 401k plans and other tax-sheltered retirement savings accounts. The difference, your income minus your savings, that's how much you spent during the year. So let's tax that. Don't tax it very heavily for low-income families and give a big standard deduction. But once you're consuming $2 million a year, $3 million a year, then the rates can be very high on the next dollar of consumption.
Well, to Warren Buffett's point, then
that would steer more money into savings and investment, which is, I think, something that Mr. Moore would approve of.
He says Buffett says we're coddling the rich. Net net, is that a vision that would mean we would lean more heavily on the revenues of the rich or not?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, by making the rates very high on the next dollar you spend, you can raise as much revenue as you feel you need to. And The nice thing about this, there's a kind of a fiscal alchemy here. You would, by encouraging the people at the very top of the spending ladder to, in tandem, spend less on the luxuries they buy, you'd shift the bar that defines what they feel they need. You wouldn't have to spend $10 million on your kids' coming-of-age party anymore. $9 million would be good enough.
I want to take that to Steve.
You could do it at $8
million. Yeah, I want to take that to Stephen Moore, but let me ask you first about the argument that if you raise taxes, ultimately, one way or another, on the rich, you're going to hurt the economy. Warren Buffett points back to Ronald Reagan's years in the 1980s. And, of course, then capital gains, for one thing, Reagan pushed to have them taxed at the same rate as regular income income tax that folks pay. And the economy did awfully well. What about right. The argument that this would hurt the economy?
The argument that it hurts the economy is right only when you scare people into a different jurisdiction or get them to change to a different kind of activity that's less useful. The kind of standard economic models that say taxes are going to cripple growth assume that all we care about is our absolute reward. If that were true, then in the 1800s, when absolute rewards were a tiny fraction of what they are now, people wouldn't have worked very hard. They would have said, why bother? But in fact, that's not what happened. People worked even longer hours in the 1800s than they do now. It's your relative reward that really counts in the world. How much money do I need? That depends on how much people like me have and what they spend. And so if you and I are rich and we each pay higher taxes, then the things we need aren't threatened by that, nor the things we want. We both want an apartment with a view of Central Park. Well, I've got to outbid you in order to get one. There are only so many of them. And if your tax goes up and mine goes up, the outcome of that bidding isn't affected by that.
Stephen Moore, Warren Buffett looks at the relatively low rate he pays ultimately. He paid $7 million, but it's still just 17-plus percent of his income compared to the others in his office.
Right.
He says we've got to close that gap in the percent people are paying. And implicit in what he's saying here, he's talking about dividends and capital gains, that we would equalize, I guess, or something more like it, the tax rate on regular income, earned income, and capital gains. Now, that was the case in Ronald Reagan's time. Why not do that? Newt Gingrich changed it in 1997. George W. Bush cut the rate further on capital gains. Why not put those back at parity?
Well, first of all, Tom, thank you for acknowledging that the 1980s and the Reagan years were a very prosperous period, and you're exactly right. It was one of the most prosperous periods in American history, and I think one of the spark plugs for that was the big rate reductions that happened under Reagan. The highest income tax rate in the United States in the 1970s was 70%. Hard to believe we had that kind of dysfunctional tax system. We cut the top tax rate in the 1980s from 70% to 28%. Guess what? Over that period, tax payments by rich people doubled. So
are you ready to do that again, 28% plus have capital gains taxed at the same rate?
That's an interesting deal because, you know, those of us who liked what we did in 1986, and I was a big fan of 1986, we cleaned out a lot of the pollution in the tax system and got rid of the tax deductions for investing in solar paneling and windmills.
But what happened? Did the rich get greedy later, pushing for that capital gains tax to go down ultimately to 15% where it is now? Is that just greedy?
I mean, here's the thing, Tom, that you're missing. I mean, and I don't want to make this too complicated, but it's really important. And I wrote this 2 weeks in the Wall Street Journal before Buffett's piece came out, and he completely ignored the argument that I made, which is this, that yes, Warren Buffett only pays a 15% capital gains tax, but the capital gains tax is paid on corporate money that you get from owning a company, right? If you own a share of stock.
Well, often, yeah.
So the point is that the corporation pays a 35% corporate tax right on that income, and then it passes it on to the shareholder. So the point I'm making, not to make this too confusing, is Warren Buffett doesn't pay 15% on the ownership of the stock. He pays the 35% corporate rate plus the 15%, and he left that completely out of the equation. So his effective tax rate is not 17 or 18%. It's 40% because somebody has to pay the corporate tax.
Yeah, right? But I think Warren Buffett's got a pretty good idea of what he's paying in taxes, most likely. We've got a lot of listeners.
But Tom, this is really important. He did not include a penny of the corporate tax that's paid before he gets a capital gains. And that's why if we're going to have a fair tax system, we should either have a corporate tax or a capital gains tax, but not both, because you're taxing the same income twice.
Let's hear from our listeners. Mark in Newport, Vermont. Thanks for calling, Mark. You're on the air.
Good day, gentlemen.
Hi.
Mr. Moore, I'm one of those fellows who has worked hard no matter what the tax rate is. I didn't work less hard when it was 39.6, and when it went to 36% on top income, I have both a business as well as investments. Your argument doesn't hold water. It's there's no empirical evidence that people work less hard, and folks like Warren Buffett and folks like myself work at the same level because that's the way we were raised and that's the incentives that we have to work hard for ourselves and our families.
So would this Buffett tax hike on the rich hit you, Mark?
I would pay slightly more, and I think that's my fair share to help with this deficit that we're running. We don't seem to want to tax people for a war. We don't want to tax people for the spending in Washington, and we got to solve this problem, and we all have to pitch in at all ends.
So you're in the high-income bracket that he's aiming at, but are you the odd man out in your social circles? Are people saying no way?
I don't believe so. I have a good friend of mine who sells very high-end yachts, and none of his clients are saying they wouldn't be willing to pay a little bit more.
Stephen Moore, I hear you there.
So, yeah, I wanted to ask this gentleman a question because I wrote a column on this a few weeks ago. I mean, it was called Liberal Hypocrites. I mean, there are all these people like Warren Buffett and this gentleman. I'm not calling you a hypocrite, but you keep saying you want to pay more taxes. You're willing to pay more taxes. Why don't you?
Isn't that nonsense, Stephen? I mean, what? We could make all payments for government voluntary then. I mean, taxes work by requiring them, right? That's how we regularize them.
But this gentleman said he wants to pay more taxes, and there's a form on the tax code where you can pay more if you want to, and none of these people, Warren Buffett, has never paid a penny more taxes than he's required.
Mark, how about it? You could just do it on your own, throw a few extra thousand, 100,000 in there?
I'm willing to pay the same rate that everyone else has to pay. And Mr. Moore is calling me a hypocrite. I feel it very sorry for you that you have no empirical evidence, that you make up these noises. You become a talking head of this extreme of the country that's going on right now. We all have to dig in a little bit and work towards solving our problems. And, I'm sure your kids didn't serve in these wars. We won't even pay for these wars. And we need to all come together as a country. And I think that's what you guys are missing, is you're not willing to compromise at all and come together as a country.
Mark, we've got it. I appreciate your call. Let's get one from Warren Buffett territory, Omaha, Nebraska. Christine is calling. Christine, you're on the air.
Hello, Tom.
Hi. What do you think?
Well, I just think it's absolutely refreshing to have a billionaire come out and confess the faults of the tax system. It's kind of like when you have a whistleblower inside a family corporation and exposes all their secrets. And I may not understand how the tax system works, but I think it's a matter of what's right and wrong. I don't know how somebody making $50,000 a year can pay 33%, but somebody like Warren Buffett and all the super rich are only paying 17%. So how is that fair? How do you justify that there's such a disparity in the taxes?
Yeah, Christine, I appreciate your call. Robert Frank, what about on simple fairness here? And, you got to be careful with fairness. You don't want to kill the golden goose. On the other hand, a lot of things were promised. They didn't all show up with that goose. What about fairness and who pays what now?
Yeah, I think the tax system, first of all, needs to think about being able to make the country work. If it's not fair, people won't comply with it and it won't work. So that's, of course, a consideration. But there's not any country on the planet that has a voluntary tax system. I know many have written saying, why doesn't Warren Buffett just pay more voluntary taxes? He gives a lot of money to charity. He's given over $30 billion of his personal fortune to the Gates Foundation. So I don't think we need to remind him that it's possible to make voluntary contributions. But tax
But his
systems,
conservative critics say, well, yeah, that proves the point. He gave it to a philanthropy, not to the government. He thinks it'll be better used there.
No, that doesn't prove that we don't need mandatory taxes. There's no country that doesn't have mandatory taxes. The ones that come closest aren't ones that any of us would want to move to. Think about Sudan. Think about Somalia. Think about Myanmar. Those are countries that have governments that don't really enforce the tax laws, so people don't pay, and then their neighbors see that they're not paying, so they don't pay either. And you can't pay for the kind of public infrastructure and social fabric that you want if you want to live in a decent country if you don't have mandatory taxes.
So should the rich pay more? William in Nashville. Thanks for calling, William. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Yes, sir.
I'm an owner of a business here in Nashville, and the thing that I've seen in the past that's problematic with this is I do think the tax structure itself needs to be redone. Mm-hmm. Is all you do is fix a tax rate on the super wealthy, which is easy to do. 99% of people aren't that. it tends to trickle down over time. More money goes into the system. We overspend. We need more money. And then we got to raise taxes. You can only go so far with this. And I think our problem is more systematic. And if all you do is say, let's tax the ultra wealthy real quick, get a bunch of money, guess what will happen? 5 years from now, that money will all be spent. We'll be right back where we are. We'll all have the same conversation about what's wrong with our tax code.
Yeah.
But I think that both the guys are right and that this is a really easy sounding fix. It sounds wonderful. And all it'll do is dump money into a system that's got a spending problem that we really got to fix as well as a taxation problem we have to address.
William, you're a businessman. Let me ask you, I mean, people have pointed to Warren Buffett's own investments. You know, he's got lots of them in insurance companies and furniture makers, a candy company, jewelry retailer, carpet company. I mean, he's got Fruit of the Loom and Dairy Queen and Benjamin Moore Paints. And people have said, you know, he's worried because middle-class Americans no longer have enough money to be good customers for their businesses. Do you see that as an issue, William, as a businessman yourself?
I do. I see people spending less, worried more about what they have, and this total, I mean, it's across the spectrum. You have things as radical as, let's do a flat tax, let's tax the ultra-wealthy. Nobody knows what's going to happen next year, who you hire, how many people you want, what purchases you're going to make, what inventory you need. It's all based on a steady system, and our system is so in flux right now, and no one knows what's going to go on, that we're all holding our breath and seeing what they're going to do to us.
William, I appreciate your call. Let me bring in James Stewart, Pulitzer Prize-winning reporter, writes the Common Sense column for the Business Day section of the New York Times. Author of Tangled Webs and Den of Thieves. James Stewart, thank you very much for joining us here.
Thanks for having me.
Can you look? You looked recently at the capital gains tax rate, which was pushed down. Newt Gingrich led it, pushing it down in the 90s, and then George W. Bush's package getting down to 15% now. It's implied, more than implied, in Buffett's plan is that that would go up. Now, is that a jobs killer? Is that good for the country?
Well, I doubt it. You know, I got interested in this because of Buffett's claim that he pays a much lower rate than everyone else in his office. And I was kind of saying, well, wait a minute, is that really fair, putting aside all the economic efficiency issues? But then when I started talking to various economists and experts, and by the way, I just assumed that I bought into the argument that, well, a lower rate is going to promote risk-taking, promote investment, create jobs, because it seems intuitively correct that a higher rate is going to discourage risk-taking. But then when I started interviewing all these people and read some of the studies, it seems to be true that there really isn't any empirical support for that. I mean, yes, obviously, at some marginal rate, it's so high that, you know, people at 100%, people aren't going to work. But at the kind of changes that are being talked about here, it's not going to stop anyone from investing or creating jobs, as Warren Buffett himself has said and as some of the callers have said. And I was struck by the 86 Tax Reform Act, in which, you know, a free market guy like Ronald Reagan himself was saying this should all be taxed at the same rate, because you then can lower the overall rates if you want to, and not discriminate against the way people use their money. You know, this whole risk idea, I was thinking, you know, I'm an author. I write books. There's a lot of risk in that. I don't know if the thing's going to sell. I spend years of reporting and researching and writing, and then I pay complete ordinary income tax.
Unlike a hedge fund manager or a private equity guy.
Yeah, nobody's giving me a break for taking risks. So it just began to seem to me more and more sensible that let's just tax all this at the same rate. And by the way, I agree with everyone who has said the tax code is a mess. It's a disaster. I'm not an expert on this, but I started looking just at the schedules for Schedule D on capital gains. It is crazy. I agree. Radical reform should be in the cards.
Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point, and we're talking this hour about billionaire Warren Buffett's call for higher taxes on the rich. We're talking about the call, what he's suggesting, looking at what it would mean for this country, its economy, its deficit. Robert Frank joins us from Cornell University, author of The Winner Take All Society and Luxury Fever. Stephen Moore is with us, co-author of The End of Prosperity, How Higher Taxes Will Doom the Economy If We Let It Happen. He's an editorial board member and senior economics writer for The Wall Street Journal, a founder and former president of the Conservative Club for Growth. And James Stewart is here, columnist for The New York Times, author of Den of Thieves and Tangled Webs. Lots of response online. Here, CRM says, the American dream is now a farce. The only way to get ahead is to already have money and or who you know in the upper wage earning categories. Jeff says the majority of members of Congress are millionaires or better. One has to account also that lobbyists are also advocating for the top 3 to 10% of earners in this country. Could make it hard for this to happen. But worried for the country, writes, the top 10% of earners already paid 71% of income taxes in 2008. It appears you want their contribution to go above 71%. Is that democratic? Robert Frank, what about that argument that you've got a lot of people at the bottom who pay nothing or next to nothing, and many at the top who cumulatively pay a lot of this country's taxes already?
Well, first of all, you have to notice that the people at the bottom are not tax exempt. Many of them don't pay federal income taxes, but they do pay sales taxes, Social Security taxes, Medicare taxes, and other taxes.
Which so are not very progressive and steep if you're not making
They're
much.
Quite regressive. Mm-hmm. But in fact, the top 1% in 1976 in this country earned less than 9% of the total national income. By 2007, that fraction had gone up to almost 24% of the national income. So their incomes as a share of GDP have gone up by almost a factor of 3, and their tax payments have gone up as a share of national income, but by a much smaller factor than that. So that's where the gains have been going. And yes, we tax income. And so, of course, they're going to be paying a higher share of taxes if they're earning an even larger share of income. But the fact is they're driving across bridges that collapse into the rivers too. If you're rich, you can build a bigger mansion and your neighbors can too. But what we know is that when everybody does that, it just shifts the bar that defines how big a mansion you think you need. You don't really gain anything from that. If you fix the bridge, you know, it's less of a chance your kid's going to die going into town that day.
Whether you're rich or poor. Stephen Moore, what about it? Whatever happens here, however radical or not, the answer ends up being, should the bottom line be a shift in the balance of who's paying what? The rich are already paying a lot as a percentage of American taxes, but they've had such great gains in wealth as well in recent decades. Should the net be that they pay more on the other side?
Well, you know, they do pay a huge amount. I mean, one of the things I hope people aren't confused about when people say, you know, like Warren Buffett says, oh, the rich pay a smaller share than middle-class people. And that simply isn't true. I mean, if you look at the richest 1% today, you know, the evil 1%, Bill Gates and Warren Buffett and Hannah Montana and Tiger Woods, I mean, they pay 40% of the income tax. 1% pay 40%. The top 10% pay about 70% of the income tax. And the bottom 50% pay about 2%. So all Americans with an income below the median in the United States pay 2%. People above the median pay 98%. It's a highly, highly progressive tax system. And what's happened...
But look at how our wealth and income are skewed.
I mean, they're so skewed. I mean, there's no question there's been a more of a concentration of wealth at the top as well. Although one of the things that's unique about America is we have what I call the income elevator effect, that people moving up and down these categories all the time. The average length
of
time...
Well, but there's been big questions raised about that.
Tom, the average length of time that someone remains in the top 1% is less than 6 years. I mean, think of, you know, professional football players or entertainers and so on. But
of course, because that's enough money to last a lifetime sometimes, and we've seen numbers coming out that Europeans have more economic mobility than us now.
That's true, and then those people pay a whole heck of a lot of tax. What's interesting is if what Professor Frank is in favor of is more equality, you know what? This recession has created that. The number of millionaires, I just did an editorial on this that people can look up last week. The number of people who had millionaire tax returns in 2009 was half the number that did in 2007. So what this recession has done is wiped out wealth, wiped out. Now, everybody got hurt, but the people at the top, their incomes fell very dramatically because they had more to lose. And that's the reason this deficit is so huge, is that we're not creating enough millionaires and billionaires. We need more Warren Buffetts. We need more Bill Gates.
Well, I mean, Americans don't want to be equal in poverty, but the folks in those mansions are not exactly squeezed that hard. Americans don't want to be suckers either. Lucas in Des Moines, Iowa. Lucas, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi. What do you think?
My question was, I don't know if you saw there was a piece last week by John Stewart where he was talking about the income inequality in the United States, and we rank 64th in the world in income inequality. And we have a lot of politicians that are talking about broaden the tax base. That'll create so much revenue for us. There's just not a lot in that lower 50%. You know, they say 71% of the taxes are paid by those millionaires and billionaires. But at the same time, you know, they control 90% of the wealth.
So do you think the balance is about right? Should they pay even more than 71%? It does sound like a high number.
It does sound like a high number, but at the same time, if they're controlling 90% of the wealth, you know, there's just not a whole lot of blood to be squeezed out of the turnip of the lower 50%.
Yeah, and so I guess it's all about getting the balance right. You don't want to hurt growth. On the other hand, you know, we've seen this more and more unequal distribution here. Mark in St. Johnsbury, Vermont. Mark, you're on the air.
Yes, hello, Tom.
Hi.
Actually, I'm sitting here, four books, 13 Bankers, Panic, Aftershock, and Against the Gods, the Remarkable Story of Risk. Back in the 30s, everybody calls the New Deal a bad thing. There was a gentleman named Mariner Eccles, who FDR brought in to run the Fed. And to quote Mariner Eccles, back in the day, as mass production has to be accompanied by mass consumption implies a distribution of wealth, not existing wealth, but of wealth as it is currently produced to provide men with buying power equal to the amount of goods and services offered by the nation's economic machinery.
Yeah, Mark, we got it. It's kind of fundamental. If you want mass consumption, you've got to have some distribution that makes that possible. James Stewart, have we fallen off that sweet spot in this country? And is that what's hurting it now? And can you fix that by raising taxes at the top?
Well, it's really interesting. I kind of disagree with Warren Buffett in the sense that I don't think we have to make this into a class warfare thing and say, okay, here are the rich and here are 9,000 at the top. Let's soak them. I mean, let's get a fair system so that Warren Buffett is not paying a lower rate than the lower hardworking, lower paid people in his office, and then see where it falls. And then, you know, beyond that, I don't have any problem with the progressive tax system. I think the wealthy, however you want to define them at some line, they can pay more. They should pay more. When I did some research on the Depression, it was very interesting to me to see that the progressive income tax was not rooted in the idea that the rich deserve to pay more or can pay more, but in the practical notion that the rich don't spend what they don't earn, what it isn't taxed. And so by lowering rates on lower earning people, you stimulate the economy more because they go out and spend, whereas the wealthy just save it. Now, whether empirical data supports that or not, I'm not entirely sure, but I think the notion is it wasn't just to punish the rich for being rich. It was because there was a practical benefit to the economy. So I think, yes, we need progressive rates. The rich are inevitably probably going to end up paying more. But most of all, what we need is a fair system, and we shouldn't be singling out any one small group. I don't care how you want to describe them and say, oh, we're just going to soak you because we
don't like
you.
Warren Buffett's essentially saying, wise up, folks. I mean, we've all heard him say, you know, that there is already class warfare and the rich are winning. He says here, you know, Congress is coddling billionaires, that it's treating them as if they're an endangered species, like spotted owls. I mean, if you...
Yeah, well, he's right about that. And that to me goes to the point, it's not fair. The current system is extremely unfair. And let's just start with a just system, or at least something close to it.
Kamel in New Haven, Connecticut. Kamel, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I just wanted to ask a question and make a point about... what I've been hearing a lot as an argument for why taxes shouldn't be raised on the rich and the super rich is that, you know, they're job creators and that, you know, doing so will further hurt job growth. And my question is, when we talk about investment on the show today, what kind of investment are we talking about? And if we're talking about job creation, the evidence just doesn't seem to be there. We haven't been raising taxes on the super rich through this entire crisis, and we haven't seen the job growth. So I just wanted to ask man on the air to speak to that if he could.
Well, let me take it to Robert Frank first. There's one argument that, look, the wealthy don't spend their money. They've parked it, and there are trillions parked right now. That one of the reasons to tax it is that then it can be spent. It at least gets it into circulation. What about that, Robert Frank?
Yeah, that's an interesting claim. And if you go back to the original argument that George W. Bush used in defense of his tax cuts on the top earners, it was that small businesses are the engine of job creation in the American economy. And if you'll give those owners of small businesses a big tax break, we'll stimulate a lot of job creation. That's completely at odds with everything we know about the logic of hiring decisions in companies. You'll hire a worker if the worker can produce enough stuff and you can sell it for enough to cover the cost of hiring the worker. That's true if you're rich. That's true if you're poor. That's true if you're a middle-income business owner. It doesn't matter if you're a billionaire or a pauper. That's the criterion. So just putting more money into your pocket is not going to stimulate hiring. The reason businesses aren't hiring right now is that they can't sell as much as they can produce already. We're mired in a deep demand shortfall, and we need to do something to stimulate spending.
Stephen Moore, you pushed hard at the Club for Growth for the tax cuts that we saw in the George W. Bush years. Did that fail?
No, well, from 2003 to 2007, during the big boom we had, in the investment tax cuts took effect in 2003, we created 8 million jobs. You can look it up. So that's a pretty good record, 8 million jobs. Now, most of those, unfortunately, are lost during the collapse of the real estate market. Look, I mean, there's an old rule in economics that if people just come away from one concept from this, I hope they do, which is if you tax something, you get less of it, right? I mean, we know that from basic economics. If you increase taxes on businesses, they're going to contract. They're not going to have the money to hire workers. They're not going to have the money to invest. The big problem with the U.S. economy right now is not that Americans are not consuming enough. The big problem is that we're seeing for the first time in 30 years in the United States is Americans are investing more money abroad than foreigners are investing here. This is not a consumption slump. It is an investment slump. And raising taxes on investment, there is no two ways around it. If you, Professor Frank, if you raise taxes on investment, you're going to get less investment, and that's going to hurt the economy.
But I mean,
actually not true.
Robert Frank, yeah?
If you tax something, that doesn't necessarily discourage it. Economic theory is completely silent on the effect of higher taxes on income. Yes, it does reduce the reward for an extra hour of work if you have a higher income tax rate, but it also makes you feel poorer. And that effect goes in the other direction. So if really it was only the after-tax wage that mattered when you were thinking about how hard to work, people would be working way less 100 years ago than they are now, but they worked harder 100 years ago than they do now.
But in our global economy, Robert Frank, will the big money just go elsewhere? That's kind of the threat here Stephen Moore's raising. Raise the taxes, it'll just go elsewhere.
Yeah, what you cannot do is have a higher tax rate on an activity that is free to move somewhere else.
Right.
That's what economics teaches us.
James Stewart, are we locked in here, Jim?
Let me just chime in because I'm completely neutral on this issue. I have no vested interest either way. And my recent examination of the literature is I think the answer is we don't really know the answers to these questions. That the problem in economics is you can't isolate one variable such as marginal tax rates or differential rates across borders. There are a zillion factors that affect economic behavior. And so economists, I think it's fair to say, really don't have the answers to those questions. So my position is, so then why not pick a just system? Why embrace this theory that, you know, lower taxes are going to promote job hiring when we don't really have any evidence to support it?
Stephen, let me ask you. Warren Buffett writes in his column, he says, this is the billionaire writing. He says, I know well many of the mega rich, and by and large, Warren Buffett writes, they are very decent people. They love America and appreciate the opportunity this country has given them. Most, he writes, wouldn't mind being told to pay more in taxes as well, particularly when so many of their fellow citizens are truly suffering. Is he wrong about his fellow mega rich, Stephen Moore?
I do think he's a hypocrite. I mean, it goes back. Look, I mean, when I raised this point before, that if rich people want to pay more taxes, why don't they? And Professor Frank said, well, you know, people, it can't be a voluntary system. Wait a minute. I mean, we have, hundreds of thousands of Americans who volunteer for the military because they think it's their patriotic duty. During the Revolutionary War, we had people give up their sacred fortunes, their lives for the good of the country. If Warren Buffett really believes that the thing for him to do is pay more taxes, why doesn't he tomorrow write a $1 billion check to the Federal Treasury?
Well, he could, but I don't know. I hate to end on that note because we know how taxes work. People pay what they're asked to pay as a matter of equity.
But that's why they're hypocrites.
Well, I don't know if that's hypocrisy or not. Yeah, I mean, anyway, Warren Buffett says they love this country. They won't mind paying. James Stewart, give us a reality check here. This is a big, big voice, Warren Buffett. $50 billion he's worth, huge in investment circles. And he's put this in about as prominent a spot as you could possibly put it, this call for higher taxes on the rich. But he also says, you know, he and his friends have been coddled by a billionaire-friendly Congress. Is there a snowball's chance, James Stewart, of something like this coming to pass?
Well, you wouldn't believe, or you probably would believe, the lobbying groups and the vested interests that are behind every one of these arcane loopholes in the tax code. I mean, the minute you start talking about carried interest, oh my God, the whole real estate industry is up in arms. So it's going to take a unifying figure like like Ronald Reagan was at the time. It's going to take somebody, a visionary who has moral authority, who can stand up in there and say, look, we're sweeping aside the special interest and we're going to do what's fair. But Warren Buffett is right. The current code does coddle the rich, in my view. I don't think there's any serious dispute about that. And it's not working. It's not raising the revenue we need, and it isn't fair. So I think I think all three of us would agree that something needs to be done to the tax code.
James Stewart, Pulitzer Prize winning columnist for the New York Times, author of Den of Thieves and Tangled Webs. Thank you very much for joining us, James.
Thank you.
Stephen Moore, we're out of time here, but we appreciate your being with us today. Co-author of The End of Prosperity, editorial board member at The Wall Street Journal. Stephen Moore, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you.
And Robert Frank, professor of economics at Cornell University, author of The Winner, Take All Society, and the forthcoming The Darwin Economy. Robert Frank, thanks for being here.
My pleasure, Tom.
Listeners, yesterday a judge in New York dismissed all criminal charges against Dominique Strauss-Kahn, the former head of the International Monetary Fund. He'd been accused of sexually assaulting a hotel maid until prosecutors decided that she was not a credible witness. We took a close look at that case in two shows. You can find them both, along with a blog post, at our website, onpointradio.org. Thanks for joining us today. You can find us on Twitter and Facebook at OnPointRadio. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.